Shalom everyone, and we're starting today with Parashat Vayishlach, the book of Genesis, chapter 32, verse 4. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv arza seir sde edom. Background, because it looks like this is in the middle of the story. In previous parasha, Vayetze, we read about Jacob leaving Be'er Sheva, going to find his mate, his soulmate, Rachel, Rachel. And he reaches Haran, where Rachel lives. She is the daughter of his uncle, the brother of his mother. And over there he spends 20 years. 20 years he lives with Laban, very tumultuous years. He wants to get married with Rachel. Laban cheats him, and after 7 years he's working for Rachel. He wakes up in the morning, and this is Leah. The story gets even more complicated because Rachel and Leah, they have kind of a competition who's giving birth to more boys. And so they bring for help their maids. So with, by the end of the parasha, Parashat Vayetze, Yaakov has 12 children, 11 boys and one girl, Dina. The story, and now Rachel is pregnant again, and Yaakov wants the last 12 son of his 12 sons to be born in the Holy Land, the Promised Land. So he leaves, he runs away basically, and finally he kind of miraculously getting away from leaving Laban, his father-in-law, that does not treat him well, but that belongs to last week's parasha. And now he's just entering to the, is now in the gates of the Promised Land. This is where we're standing. And here, that's what I just read. And Yaakov is sending angels in front of him to Esav, his brother, to the land of Seir, the field of Edom. So we learn from that that Esav already chose to live in Edom. Today is the south of what is today the Kingdom of Jordan. What is known as Petra, the red rock, red, Edom is red, Esav was red. So everything fits together, that was a place. Why does Esav live in Edom while Jacob is not home? 20 years, he could settle the Holy Land. However, he knew that the prophecy that and the commitment and the promise that was given to Abraham, that the people who will inherit the Promised Land, they will have to be slaves in a foreign land for 400 years in order to get the merit of inhabiting the Promised Land. Esav did not want that 400 years of slavery, so he chose to live outside the Promised Land in Edom. Same thing with Ishmael. He chose to live in what is today Arabia. So both of them knew the prophecy and the promise, and they said, okay, not me. So here it is. We have some, you know, little details give us the picture. So here there's in this parasha, we have few very important concepts to learn. Some of them are new, some of them are just developed from previous parashot and are being given from another angle. So what are the main issues over here? Jacob is coming back home. As he is coming home, he is immediately dealing with the issue that made him leave home 20 years earlier when he went to Haran. It is because Esav, his brother, wanted to kill him. You know, somehow, you could send Isaac did not go to Haran to marry Rivka. He sent them, or more correctly, his father Abraham sent his servant Eliezer to Haran to bring Rivka. Okay, same thing could have happened over here. No, Rivka knew that Esau wants to kill Jacob, so she's sending him away so Esau does not kill Jacob. Now, Jacob is coming back, and the Zohar is asking a very simple question. And the question is, what for? Why does he have to wait 20 years later? Why does he have to wait the problem? You can read it in Zohar Parashat Vayishlach in the Sulam, verse 15. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Amar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba said, Vechi lama nitorer Yaakov lishloch malachim el Esav. Why Yaakov needs to awaken into this issue and send messengers to Esav? Halo mutav haya lishtok mimeno. It's better to keep silent. Maybe Esav forgot. Why? And the answer is that Jacob is basically the symbol, as we learn in previous parasha, in Parashat Vayetze. Jacob is not just a person. We're not learning over here a history of the Abraham family. We're learning about types of behavior that are based in the book of Genesis for all of us to learn, to adapt, in order to achieve the best we can achieve in our spiritual journey. And now the point is very simple. Jacob is saying, I don't want to procrastinate. I don't want to move the question for somewhere, a time that it's going to be the least comfortable for me. I need to hit the iron when it's still hot. I'm entering the land. I don't want to live in fear. I need to deal with that right now. And another thing, he says, Yodea ani she'Esav chared al kvod av. I know that Esav, he has many traits, horrible most of them, but he has one thing that he really has tremendous respect to his father, our father, Isaac. He never made Isaac angry. Ve'yodea ani, and I know, hoil v'avichai, since Isaac is still alive, and I'm not afraid of him because if not now, any time later, Isaac could die, and then I'm not protected. Let me do that right now when still our father is alive. That it's the highest probability that Esav won't dare touch me. Lachet, so we learn from that a lot. That, hey, when you are connected to what we learned in the previous parasha to the central column means that, and that's what Jacob is about, that's the aspect of human behavior that we have to adopt. And Jacob is the prototype for that aspect. It is about synthesizing Abraham and Isaac together. Abraham giving, sharing, loving, kindness, chesed. And with Isaac, which is judgment, which is overcoming negativity, over discipline, all of these. And also about, you know, I'm here and I'm not giving up who I am. So putting that together is described by Rabbi Ashlag, the founder of the modern Kabbalah movement, the author of the commentary to the Zohar, Sulam. And that's basically when you take Chesed and Gevura, Abraham and Isaac, the giving and the receiving, and you synthesize them together, you get the central column, which is Jacob. And central column means the desire to receive for the sake of sharing, which means I'm not giving up my desires to receive. However, I bind them. I commit them. I harness them with the condition that if you want your life to be great, make other people's life great too. And when you do that, you turn your own desire, passion, needs, ambitions from finite, because when you want something, you know, you're a human being, how much can you get? It is always finite. The problem is that the source of bliss in this universe is infinite. That's a creator. You want to connect to his infinite bliss, you need, by the law of affinity, you need to create an equal frequency. When you are desiring just for yourself, you create a finite wish. Somebody wants to be rich. That's finite. How much money can you get? There's only a limited amount of money all over the planet. This is finite. Okay, if you get the point. Okay, but when you want not just the money, you want the value. I want to have a lot of money so I can make a difference. I can give charity. I can create business that is going to make the world better. Which means my desire is not just to have money. My desire has a meaning, a value that is much bigger than just having money. My desire is to have money and power and success so I can move the world of humanity forwards towards perfection. This is an infinite idea. When you connect to the infinity, by how? By synthesizing Abraham and Isaac together. This is Jacob. When you do that, then you generate an ongoing flow of bliss and energy in your life. So, if you really want to have a successful life, you must have a spiritual life. And a spiritual life means, if there's something that I really need and work for, and I want to achieve, and I have an ambition, I need to connect it somehow to the infinite. And the only way I can do it is, whatever I get, I'm also using it in order to give. I'm not just giving it away, but I'm using it. So, the more I know, let's say, in my profession, I can be of more help to my customers or to other people. If you get the point, this is the secret of real, true success, which means this is how you connect to infinity. Okay, this is why Jacob, although he is challenged by living with one of the most horrible human beings living on earth in his time, his uncle, okay, Laban, the father of his wives. Laban was the father of all four wives of Jacob. Jacob had Rachel and Leah. He had two more concubines who were the daughters of Laban, but from concubines. So altogether, all four were the daughters of Laban. And he lives in that place. And as the Zohar is saying, this is a terrible place. The Passover Haggadah starts with the words Arami Oved Avi. Laban from Aram, he wanted to destroy my forefather, my ancestors, which is Jacob or Israel. So that's how the story is starting. And he's coming out of Laban with four wives, 12 children, and a huge fortune. Most of it is in the shape of sheep, camels, as we're going to see in the rest of the story. But first of all, Jacob is teaching us that sustenance, success, happiness, whatever, it's all about our ability to merge and to synthesize the chesed and the gevura. And we spoke a lot about it in the previous parasha. In this one, we want to elevate into a higher place and understand more aspects of the same idea. Which is, again, this is the secret of not just survival, but success against all odds. What were the odds that Jacob is going to be successful in the house of his father-in-law? The Zohar goes into this issue. And the Zohar says something very, very clear. I'm skipping now to verse 22. Rabbi Yehuda is asking, מה ראה יעקב ששלח אל עשיו ואמר עם לבן גרתי? Why is it that Jacob is sending a message to Esav, his brother? I lived with Lavan for so many years. How is that important? ומשיב אל הלבן הארמי קולו הלך בעולם, שעוד לא היה אדם שינצל מידיו, כי הוא היה מחשף שבמחשפים וגדול הקוסמים. אביו של באור היה. כל העולם היו יודעים, verse 23. So, first of all, it was famous around the world that Lavan was the greatest warlock and specialist in the dark arts. Magic, dark magic, especially witchcraft, any kind of it, he was the strongest and the most vicious of all of them. Verse 23. כל העולם היו יודעים שלבן היה גדול החכמים והמחשבים והקוסמים. The whole world knew that Lavan was the greatest of all wizards and specialized in witchcraft. ומי שלבן רצה לאבד בכשפיו לא ניצל ממנו. No one could be saved from Lavan the moment Lavan wanted to basically destroy him. וכל מה שידע בלעם מלבן היה. And remember there was a great big wizard who was dark also, Balaam. The whole parasha of Balak is talking about him and his attempt to have the first genocide of the Israelite nation. He failed, as we know. Otherwise, we're not supposed to be here. Where did he get his wisdom of witchcraft? Says the Zohar, that was from Lavan. Lavan was his grandfather. וכל שכן לבן, וכל העולם היו יראים מלבן מקשפם. And therefore, the whole world was afraid of Lavan and his witchcraft. ולפיכך מילה ראשונה ששלח יעקב לעשיו, the first thing that Yaakov sent to Esav, עם לבן גרתי, I lived with לבן. ואם תאמר שזמן מועט היה חודש או שנה, let's say it was just, you know, a short time, a month or a year. No. לא כן. ואחר הדתה, 20 years, that late, that I lived with him. ואם תאמר שלא עלתה לי מזה בידי כלום, verse 24, But let's say nothing came out of it. You know, I lived with Lavan and somehow survived and I somehow escaped. Okay? No. Vayhi li sho v'chamo, I had an ox and a donkey. Why an ox and a donkey? Sheep, slave, and a maid. All of these are basically hints for the levels of witchcraft. Because an ox and a donkey, they are also, because look, we're talking about what Jacob had. He had, if we read about the gifts that he gave to Esau, a lot of cattle, a lot of camels and goats and stuff like this. But he's just saying these words. These words in the world of witchcraft symbolize the five levels of witchcraft. So on one hand, Jacob is speaking about having livestock and slaves and maids, but he's hinting that if I got out from Lavan with so much, I am a better and bigger warlock than he is, and I'm stronger with witchcraft than he is. Why is he doing that? מיד היה מתיירא עשיו. Immediately, when Esav realized that, he was afraid. ויצא לקראתו, he came to welcome Jacob, but he was very much scared. He was scared very much. as much as Jacob was scared of Esav. Okay, so what are we learning over here? We're learning two things. Because, you know what, we'll read the Zohar, what the Zohar was saying. Because the story continues, so he's sending Esav messengers, but it says angels. And many commentators are saying, yes, he did send real angels. Okay? So, but here it says messengers. The point is, the same way the message was, I have richness and livestock, okay? And the same time saying, I am a great warlock and I can control the five levels of the dark side. In one sentence, he says both the same over here. He's sending messengers with that message to Esav, but he's also sending angels. What's an angel? So in his one of the greatest books of the teachings of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, it's called The Gates of the Holy Spirit, Sha'ar Ruach HaKodesh. In the beginning of that book, Rabbi Chaim Vital, he wrote all eight gates of the Arizal's wisdom. The Arizal did not write anything. He could not. He had too much information to give, and he was not capable of writing it. Only Rabbi Chaim Vital, he had a special quality to understand his teacher and to write it in a way that everyone who reads will understand it in his own level. Very, very special. Otherwise, you cannot write a Kabbalah book if you don't have this ability, that trait that Rabbi Chaim Vital had. So, in the gate, it is called the Gate of Ruach HaKodesh. It says in the beginning of it, what about angels? There are all kinds of angels. But the most important angels, the most practical, these are the angels human beings create along their lives. And how are these angels being created? So the Arizal is explaining, when a person is doing an action, there's a law of preservation of energy in the physical realm, but there's also a law of preservation of energy in the spiritual world. Which means every action generates spiritual energy. That energy stays forever. Now the question is, what kind of an energy? So if we're talking about the positive side, when somebody is doing a good deed, okay, helping someone, charity for instance, or anything of a deed that is connecting to spiritual forces, the few levels of the quality of the angel that is being created from that act, which means, if you're doing that act just out of human logic, which means it says that you should give charity. It says that you should help the poor, help the needy. So you help the poor, you help the needy, because that's a logical thing and it's a nice thing to do. Okay? And you just do it because you care. That creates an angel, but this angel is the lowest on the rank. Because you do it, because it seems to be right, so you do it. However, the more aware the person is about the ramifications of every action in the spiritual dimensions, so you add the knowledge of what happens when you give charity, so you learn the understanding of charity and what's, where does it say in the Torah and how, and what kind of charity is the highest, and you have the different levels of charity that you can find it in the books. The more you know, the more awareness you have behind the act, the more powerful is the act and the more powerful is the angel that is being generated by the act. The highest level is the angels that are being created when you know, on one hand, all the metaphysical aspects, the Kabbalistic aspect of each action, let's say again, charity or any other mitzvah, and you're also very, very, very devoted with excitement and happiness on doing that action. So, which means, on one hand, you have the action itself that generates the energy, because you give charity, you generate positive forces. These forces, positive forces, become an angel that walks with you, not just for the rest of your life, even for the next lifetime, till you complete totally your tikkun. These angels stay with you forever. Okay? Now, however, just knowing about it, it's not the whole thing. The more passionate you are about the action itself, the more excited you are about it, the more appreciative you are about your opportunity to perform a mitzvah, which means an action that has value, and it has a value of connecting the heaven and the earth, the more powerful the angel is. And if you know the Kabbalistic intentions and meditations behind it, the Kavanah, of course, this angel will be much, much stronger and bigger. Angels like this create protection, which means, I always like to tell the story about one of the great sages, rabbis, you call it holy men, that lived in the Ukraine in the 19th century. His name was Shpoli Zayde, the Zayde of Shpoli. And he was a very holy man, and a rich Jewish man came to him, and he said, the Russian government takes me to court. Of course, they framed me, but they want to take all my fortune. And what can I do? So the holy man said to that rich man, we know that charity will create a prosecutor attorney, an angel that is also a defendant attorney. So there's a couple right now that's supposed to get married. Both are orphans. They have no parents, no family. And if you are going to just basically provide all the needs for the wedding, which means the dress, the food, the place, everything, and also a place for the couple to live after they get married, that will create for you, I'm sending you a great defending attorney. He's going to save you for sure. So this guy gives charity to help the two. And he comes to the holy man, the Shpoli Zayde, the grandfather of Shpoli, and says, who's going to be the attorney you're sending? He said, don't worry, you go to the great court of Odessa, and on the steps going to court, you'll meet your attorney. The guy needs a real deep faith in order to be able to trust that. You know, that's a very, all his business, his life creation is at stake, and he has to trust the rabbi. And he does. And he comes the day of the court case. He's coming to the big court in Odessa, and he's going up the steps, and a man comes to him. He looks like an attorney. He says, I'm your attorney. They come into court, and the attorney is amazing. He's amazing. He's like, the way he speaks, he gets all the judges really dizzy. It's like they can't get what he's doing. He's like taking them into dizziness. Finally, they acquit and dismiss the case. So the rich man goes to the Rebbe, and he's saying, Rebbe, it's like, this is an amazing attorney. I never met somebody so smart. They had no idea what hit them. It's like he just got me out of it. This was magic. Can you give me that? But he ran away and disappeared, and I couldn't get his name. You know, there's so many people could get help from such an attorney. So the holy man said, but this attorney, you can't use him anymore because every angel is made for one purpose. And that angel, that attorney, is the angel you created by the charity for wedding the two, getting into a wedlock, these two orphans. He did his job, and now he can't serve anybody else, only you. So when we are standing in front of a very dire situation and we are afraid that we are going to be hurt, it doesn't have to be a dire situation, it could be a challenging situation. One of the major ways to deal with that is to generate angels. And creating angels of protection, I just explained how do you do that. When we do our mitzvot, when we do stuff that is connecting, helping, connecting to spirituality, connecting to the bliss of the creation, and in order to give to others, exactly as we explained before, the more enthusiastic we are, the more caring we are, the more giving we are, the more aware we are of our action, we can create stronger angels, and these angels will escort us. And you can just have a meditation, and you know it's a court case, you know it's something else, you know it's a business, a very important business meeting. Just send light, positivity. And when you do good actions, helping others and do mitzvot like this, just concentrate on sending angels of protection and power to that challenging event. That will give you a lot of protection. And more than that, we need so much protection. We need so much protection against even evil we have no idea that exists. The main thing is to send angels. How do you send angels? Be busy all the time looking for opportunities to be there for someone else and to do it with excitement, knowing that by this you generate your protective shield of angels. And that's the first thing that Jacob is doing. He's sending angels of all his positivity to that moment of the meeting with Esau. But he's not satisfied with that alone. He's also practical. Remember, Jacob is a symbol of the synthesis between the right and the left, the Abraham and the Isaac, the chesed and the gevurah, the giving and the receiving, but also he's the one that knows how to connect the heaven and the earth, which means the spirituality, the awareness, together with the practicality, which basically this is the main thing of understanding what the whole Torah is about. So he's also doing, so as we said, he's also not just sending positive angels, but he's also taking an action in dealing with the threat that he's facing right now. So, what is he doing? So, as we said, he's on one hand, he's giving Esav huge gifts. He's bribing him. He's nice to him. He's talking to him like, "You are my master, I am your slave." He's talking to his ego. And then the angels are coming back. Genesis 32, verse 7. Vayashuvu hamalachim el Yaakov, le'emor banu el achicha el Esav, ve'gam olech likratcha, ve'arbamot ish imo. And the angels slash messengers come back to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother, to Esav," and the Zohar says, and many commentators, "to your brother Esav." Why? He has only one brother. Why brother Esav? You thought he changed, he's the same Esav. He was. And how do you know? He's coming towards you to welcome you with 400 warriors. 400 warriors? Jacob is with four wives, 12 children, and some shepherds. that he's hiring for taking care of all his sheep and cattle and stuff like this. Like, how is he going to deal with 400 warriors? And they are disciples of Esav, the master of hunting and warfare. Verse 8, Vayira Yaakov meod. And Jacob got really scared. Vayitzer lo, he was stressed out. Vayachatz et ha'am asher ito ve'et ha'tzon ve'et ha'bakar ve'gmalim shnei mechanot. He's splitting the camp into two camps. And he prays. And that's verse 11. Why splitting into two camps? I skipped that. In case Esav attacks, will it be in two camps? He attacks one camp, the other one will take the cover of the turmoil and run away and escape. So at least one camp will be saved. So he's really practical about dealing with what's going to happen. Vayomer, and then he says, and now we come into verse 10. And he prays. Vayomer Yaakov Elohei Avi Avraham Veloi Avi Yitzchak. And Jacob speaks to God. He speaks to God, which is a very important thing. Speaking to God is part of our personality, our way of life. It is crucially important for our well-being and also for our success. And why is it? We'll see. And how does he start? The Lord of the God of my father Abraham and the God of my father Isaac. Basically, the main prayer in the Jewish prayer book that is being recited three times a day on a weekday, four times a day in a Rosh Chodesh holiday in Shabbat, five times a day on Yom Kippur, starts with, "Bless are you, God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." He's just giving us the path. And he says, "The God who's telling me, go back to your land and your birthplace, and I will do good with you." And then he says something that is very important. We should realize that. Katonti, verse 11. Katonti mikol hachasadim, mikol haemet, asher asita et avdecha, ki bemakli avarti teyarden hazeh vata, hayiti lishnei machanot. I'm not worthy to all the grace you've done with me and all the truth that you did with me, because when I crossed the Jordan to go to my uncle, I had only a staff. That's the whole thing. Yeah, there's a legend that he had a lot of fortune he took with him to pay Lavan, but he was robbed on the way by Eliphaz, the descendant of Esav, that wanted to kill him. We won't go into it right now. He had nothing when he came to Lavan. Now I have two camps. So much fortune, four wives, 12 children, all of that. You know, I don't think I'm worthy of all that greatness you did to me. And this is a very important thing for all of us to understand. The sages are saying that when you're facing a challenge, you should be, on one hand, be ready to give, to bribe. Somebody violent wants to take your life away, wants to destroy you, you should bribe him. You know, he wants it because he wants money, wants power. Give him the money, give him the power. That's what Jacob is doing. Give him the money, he's giving him a lot of cattle, a lot of sheep, he's giving like huge amount with today's worth, this is millions. What he's giving, you just calculate. What the gifts that Jacob gave to Esau, it's worth millions today. All the camels and the cattle, whatever, this is like a lot of money. He's giving that, he's giving him also pride. I'm your servant, you are my master, I'm your servant, you're my master, I appreciate you. What all of the messages that he's sending, all the respect, You need to do that. Look, he is Jacob, and he is going to face Esau the warrior with an army of 400 people. Okay, so that says you should be ready to give a gift. On the other hand, you should be ready for a war. You should be really practical. You don't trust, like, America will happen, nothing will happen. No, you have to be ready for war. You have to be really practical as much as you can. What can Jacob do? He can only split his camp into two. So when one is hit, the other one will finally, you know, run away. Okay? And the third thing, prayer. And here comes the understanding of the prayer. What is he doing? How does he start with the prayer? Thankfulness. He is thankful for all what the Creator did with him. He's saying, I'm not worthy of all what you gave me. You brought me up to here, like I got so much. Appreciation is one of the strongest tools. Thankfulness is one of the strongest tools of being able to keep your blessings. Which means, let me read the Zohar for you about it. Okay. There are many aspects about it, but one, in verse 44 in Pirush HaSulam of the Zohar Parashat Vayishlach. V'chol kach lama amaru lei. בגין הקודשה בכו יתראי תדיר בצלות און לצדיקיה ומתעתר בצלות און. First of all, why would God take Jacob into such a horrible test or challenge? He's facing his brother who's a killer, a murderer, and he's still very strong with a vengeance. Okay? Why can't God just turn Esau around to make him have some amnesia, dementia, and he will forget it? You know, isn't that easier? And it's not. Because the Zohar says, God always wants the prayer of the righteous. And he makes crowns out of these diadems, out of these prayers. What do you mean? Like God needs our prayers? So the answer is like this. He doesn't need a prayer. Why? He's endless. We are finite. Can a finite being change the endless? No way. However, we have to remember that there is a purpose behind the creation. The purpose behind the creation is that the source of the whole creation is the will of the Creator to share with us, to share his bliss, his whatever greatness he has to share. The point is that when we go through our lives, because life is so difficult so many times, we have the tendency to settle for less. We have the tendency to minimize our ambitions because we try. Sometimes we try more than once, we fail, and then we settle for less, we compromise. Now, we were not created for the compromise. We were created to receive all the bliss the Creator intended to give us. And that's the most important thing. The problem is like this. We have a very big issue with that, because when we are trying to define what is our goal, what is it we want to achieve, many times we miss the point. Let's say, a lot of people think, if I have a successful family and enough money to buy a house, whatever, you know, death is a goal. Is that all? And again, in the teachings of the Arizal, the two concepts that are very important, or pnimi or mekif. Or pnimi is the light we already achieved through our spiritual actions of transformation. That's the part of our personality, the good part of our personality, that is already corrected, that is already like the base of our well-being. However, this is not enough. There's another light, it is called the surrounding light, and the surrounding light is the light, the abundance, the bliss that the Creator intended to give us in the first instance of the creation, because, you know, the Creator is above time, that is part of the program. Now, this is called the surrounding light. Why is it surrounding light? Because it's surrounding us, it's not within us, it's not inside, we don't own it. It's a potential light, the potential growth we have. The surrounding light is usually the culprit in our life. Why? The surrounding light is that power that we can kind of smell it, sense it, and it's like the Creator ongoingly testing us, deep in our subconscious, saying, is that all? Do you settle for less? Do you settle just for that? I created you to receive so much more. And you're not doing anything to receive that? Okay, I'll give you an example. I'll give you an opportunity. What's the opportunity? You think that you are this much, and then you're facing a challenge, and your immediate reaction is, this is too big for me. I'm never going to be able to deal with that. That's going to finish everything I've just achieved. So we get scared, and we already have a death wish when things like this happen, because we are so, so much afraid, and fear is death. And here, the Zohar is teaching us, you have to look at it differently. Why are we facing a scary, huge, terrible challenge? It's because our surrounding light, which is basically the power the Creator is gave us already at the creation, that power is challenging us, because it is challenging us so we will finally say, I do. I really am willing to step up and try to be greater than what I thought I could be, because that's the only way I can deal with that crisis. Ve'im tomar alo machanot ha-malachim ha-kdoshim ayu ba'im. But he had so many armies of holy angels to protect him. Why is he praying? Why is he saying, katonti, I'm not worthy of all what you gave me? אלא צדיקים אינם סומכים על זכותם, אלא תפילות ובקשות אל ריבונם. The righteous do not count on their merit. They count on their prayers. And here comes the secret. When we pray, and we are thankful for everything we received, on one hand, we build the vessel to keep it. Because whatever you appreciate, the moment you appreciate something, you know, you appreciate your relationships, you are taking care of it. You appreciate your health, so then you're taking care of it. You appreciate your spiritual level, so you're taking care of it. Appreciation means that you're still ready to receive whatever the Creator wants to give you. More than that, but more than appreciation, you appreciate and you pray to God. What is it that you pray to God? What is that Jacob is doing? He's not saying, please God, smite Esau and get him out of my way. No, he's not giving any advice like this to God how to solve the problem. Remember, the logic that got you into the problem won't get you out of it. He's just saying in plain words, "Hatzilenina miyadachi miyadesav," save me, please, from my brother, from Esav, because he can finish everything. What Jacob is doing, and that's what all of us are doing, we are not telling God, "God, I was so good in this case, I was so good in this case," and because of doing that, it's like you are wasting all your merit because you count on what you've done already. But you're not doing that. You are connecting in your prayer, says the Zohar, not to your merits, you're connecting to God's will. You're connecting to your surrounding light. How much is there waiting for you? Endless, relatively, to what you believe you deserve. If you're going to pray and ask for your merits and using your own angels to protect you, you're basically using up what you created already. But why are you in trouble? Because there's something bigger waiting for you. And the only way to save yourself from that is connecting to God's will. Me'otzar matnat chinam choneni. Give me from the treasure of free gifts. What do I mean a free gift? When I'm appreciative of what God gave me, I can build a vessel of receiving whatever God wants to give me. How much does he want to give to each one of us? Infinite. I don't want to limit. That's why it says God is taking the prayers and make a diadem out of them. What's a diadem? It's a hint to Keter. Keter means the original source, the original will of the Creator to give us infinite bliss and pleasure. This is where we want to connect. Which means, how can we manifest God's will in this world? By asking God to give us whatever He wants to give us, not based on our merit, based on His will. This is connecting to the Keter. This is connecting to Anagat Arich. I'm connecting not to my merit, not to my limits. I'm connecting, trying to connect. And let go and let God, which means to connect to His will to save me. By this I unleash and correct my surrounding light. That will unleash and correct my next level. That will bring in that level of perception, understanding, awareness, even skill that is waiting for me. I never bothered to take it, to achieve it. Only that challenge, that moment of trouble, forced me to ask for it. I'll give you another story, which is a Hasidic story. The Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement. One of the famous stories about that one day he takes all his students, they go for a ride, they come to this town, they come to this run down house and they knock on the door, they come in, he came here to stay for the Shabbat. So he's Jewish home, but everybody realized that the guy is not very rich. But the guy realizes that you have a whole bunch of poor people. He has no idea who's the Baal Shem Tov, but he knows that's a holy person and he has a great opportunity to host him for Shabbat. He has no money. So he runs to the neighbors to get a loan. He's putting on mortgage all his property, whatever he has, and he's buying the food and he's feeding them. And the students are really kind of worried what's going on with the master, the Baal Shem Tov, that usually doesn't care about what he eats. This time he eats and he eats. He doesn't stop to eat till he makes sure there's nothing left. And when finally after Shabbat, nothing left in the house to eat, they say thank you, goodbye, and they leave. Okay, years pass by, many years. And one day the Baal Shem Tov says, "I want to show you something very special. Let's go for a trip." And they go, they come to the same town. Some people even remember, "Oh, we've been over here." They come to this house that they visited that time, and instead of this rundown house, is a beautiful, beautiful big house. They knock on the door. The same guy opens the door, but now he looks like, you know, he's dressed up nicely, and he's so excited to see them. He says, "Now, finally, I can really host you properly. You know, what can I, you know, order for you? All kinds of fish and all kinds of meat." And the butcher says, "No, nothing, just, you know, a little cake and something to do l'chaim." And they sit. And they're really, like, perplexed. They say, like, Rabbi, what's happening over here? So the Baal Shem Tov, the holy Baal Shem Tov, talks to the host and says, "Tell us exactly what happened from the moment we left you." And he says, "I have to tell you the truth. I sold everything. So all the furniture I gave away because I sold it before Shabbat. I just gave it away after Shabbat because I needed the furniture to host you guys. I'm sitting on the floor. There's no food. I have no penny. The kids are hungry. They're crying. And I'm saying, like, dear God, I need to feed my kids. And I don't want to be in a position that I cannot feed hosts and host all of these guests and feed my kids. It's like, there's no way. I need money right now to be able to continue to be the person I want to be." And there's a knock on the door. And there's an old farmer knocking on the door. He's half drunk. And he's saying, "I heard there's some good drinking in this house. Can you give me?" So, like, "I have no drinks. I gave everything. But I checked. I found a little tiny in one of the barrels, some kind of vodka. I gave him." He said, "Oh, the best vodka in the world. Can you give me more here? I pay you money." He went to the neighbors. He bought from them with that money. Finally, the guy is drinking, and they also he's paying them, him and his wife, and they feed him. And after the whole day, that man says, "Look, I see that you guys are very nice and kind. I'm a rich farmer, but my sons grew up, and who wants to have this old drunk man living in the house? They simply threw me out of the farm. They took over everything. And I'm now, like, homeless. Please take care of me. I know what I'm doing, what I'm going to have. So I hid most of my fortune in the forest, and I'll pay you. You feed me, I'll pay you. You give me a place to sleep. And when I die, you can take all my money." So that's exactly what happened. For a few years, they treated him like their father. And a few years later, he passed away. He was old. And they became very rich, and they bought and they built, restored the house, bigger house. Now they can have more guests, and now they can entertain more people, and so on. So all the students are looking at the Baal Shem Tov like, "What's going on over here? How did you know? What happened?" So the Baal Shem Tov said, "When I was traveling in my journeys in the upper worlds, I realized that this man had a fortune waiting for him. The problem is, he never asked. So I had to force him to ask. So when we are in trouble, and we are in a place that we really see hopeless all over, wherever we look at, we have to remember this is the surrounding light. Something bigger is waiting, and we just have to ask for it. Ask for what? You don't know what. Because that's outside the box. We spoke about it on Parashat Vayetze. You don't know because otherwise you won't feel the pressure. Think about it. Something that size wants to come to your vessel, which is that size. You settle for less. Now something bigger wants to come in. So who do you pray to? You pray to the Creator to give you what He wants to give you, not what you think. Because all solutions you could think about, they're within the box of your own prison, which means your belief system and your logic of the past. That's worthless anymore. You just have to let go and ask. How? On one hand, you start with thanksgiving, appreciating whatever you've got. By that, you prepare yourself to understand whatever you've got is much more than what you thought you could get. Now that you appreciate it, you know there's another appreciating waiting, what you're going to get. You don't know what it is. It's going to be great. It's going to be even greater what can you imagine. And that's exactly the learning that we get over here from Jacob. You appreciate, on one hand, you're thankful for whatever you have, and you ask for more. Not for yourself, but you ask for more. What you ask for, the treasure that is called Otsar Matnat Chinam, the free gift treasure. Why it's free gift? Because that's the treasure the Creator wanted to give you in the first place. So you're willing to receive that. And when you stick your thought in the highest place, it's not about what do I want. It's what the Creator wants to give me. To trust that there is a Creator that wants to give you so much more than what you even imagine you deserve. When you connect to that place, you connect to the crown, to the keter, to the first thought, then all kinds of amazing things could happen. And now, the other lesson that is continuing the lesson from the past chapters. Also, when Jacob meets Esau, after he prayed, after he prepared for war, after he sent so much gifts, he bows down to Esau 7 times. And Esau breaks down and kisses him. Kisses him. What happened? So the Zohar says that Jacob really made him really perplexed, confused. So he broke up and he hugged him with all his heart. That's what Rabbi Shimon is saying. Why? Because Jacob did not try to be right. He tried to do the best he could. We have this problem. It's one of our evil inclinations. We want things to be right. We want things to be just. This is not giving a solution, not in this world. We learned before. In this world, Esav has the birthright. In this world, the people who rule the biggest powers in the world, money, politics, whatever, they're not kind, honest people with value. This is the Esavs who run the world. You cannot just say, we are right, so we deserve to have justice. It doesn't happen this way. You cannot be right. You have to be wise. And to be wise means appreciating what you've got. And not looking for being right. Looking to do what is right. And what is right is to do it from a wise place. With Esav, Jacob knew that what runs him, what runs the show in his show, and like most people, Esau's, it's ego, pride. You have to talk to him on his level. The way to buy Esau was he gave him gifts and more gifts and more gifts. And then he bowed down to him. He gave him a lot to his ego. And what was the result? He broke down and hugged him and kissed him and let him go. But that's not right. He doesn't deserve it. That's not the way this world is working. If you are working, you're an employee, and you're working with people on top of the company, you see all the games of ego and pride and power and stuff like this. You can't just say, oh guys, how could you do that? You're not in a position to say that. You have to play knowing that that's the weak point, and you have to get the best going, knowing that's the weak point, saying I'm right. You know, you can't sell it anywhere. Okay? What if you own your own business, but you see around the people that you have to deal with, the other companies, suppliers, buyers, government officials that you need to get approval, whatever. Most of them are Esau's. You can't just do it. You have to work the way Jacob worked. Till the coming of the Mashiach, the world works this way. If you're trying to find justice, forget it. You lost it. That's ego looking for justice. The Esau's, they proclaim justice. They don't really mean that. Okay? They don't really mean that. But they play the game. And you have to play the game. If you have honesty and integrity, whatever, you can't just go on being right. You have to do what is right. And that's where success is leaning, because when you do what is right without ego, without pride, and sometimes you have to give like charity to people who need respect and honor, because that's what they need. Their ego is so big, they can't get anything else. So that's considered to be charity in a way. So there are many, many other issues in this parasha. There's so many other challenges that Jacob is facing. But we have to remember, we're not here to be right. We're here to be the light. We're here to be wise. We're here to connect to God's will, which is always endlessly good. And how to find that. And it's always beyond our logic. And that's how we can always deal with these great, impossible challenges. Why is it great and impossible? It's outside our box. They're not really great and impossible. We deserve it and they're possible. But we have to acquire them by overcoming the need to be right, the fear, and also the belief system, you know, those Esau's, they run the show, so I'm vulnerable. No, you're not. You're not. You just have to connect to God, not to your might, not to your power, not to your wisdom. They got you into a problem. And then you get a higher level of wisdom, might, power. You just get stronger and stronger, but not the way people really get. Only through emunah, faith and connection, prayer and appreciation. Good luck to you all. All the best.